corner, obviously, we hold in high regard, but those corners become a lot better if you get rush on the quarterback.
I think both offensive tackles are very good and have a chance to be very good players.
I still don't understand why we're not drafting 7 defensive players.
Welcome to the 2013 Jacksonville Jaguars NFL Draft, presented by PwC. Tonight you'll hear from Jaguars General Manager David Caldwell, Head Coach Gus Bradley,
the Jacksonville Jaguars select,
and the 2013 first round pick of your Jacksonville Jaguars. Join voice of the Jaguars Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lagerman, and Jaguars.com senior writer John Osier as they give you insight and analysis on who's going where and who's moving where.
I don't think at any of those top 10 players there's a huge amount of risk with any of those guys.
We'll also hear perspective from Tony Baselli, live from London.
Finally.
He's been here way too long.
Now, to get things started, here's Brian Sexton.
All right, good evening and welcome to the 2013 Jacksonville Jaguars NFL Draft, presented by our good friends at PwC, and their Earn Your Future initiative is empowering students and future leaders through financial responsibility. PwC, pleased to sponsor the 2013 Jacksonville Jaguars NFL Draft. Brian Sexton with you here inside Jaguar Central, and we've got a lot of folks taking part over the next couple of hours. Sitting just to my left is John Osher, tapping away there on the computer. Obviously, .com is going to be raging tonight. What are you looking forward to?
Well, see who they pick, right?
Yeah.
it's going to be a good night. We're actually going live. J.P. Shattuck and I will be doing a live TV show on the web right after the pick, talking about the pick. We'll have Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell talking during that, and obviously be writing stories on the pick throughout the night. So it's
tweeting as well.
Yeah, if fans have liked the coverage from the big events that we've done so far, it'll be very similar on Jaguars.com tonight.
All right, so you want to stay tuned to Jaguars.com as well as this fine radio station. Across the table is my broadcast partner, you know, Jeff Lagerman, and you had a chance to sit down with the head coach.
I did, and you know, this day really represents a lot of hope for everybody. Every team in the National Football League, all 32 teams except for one, feel really good about last year. And this day is really a significant day because they all feel that they can get better today, not only today, but today, tomorrow, and the next day.
All right, and that's coming up in just a couple of moments. Let's go outside to the VIP Fan Fest where we've got J.P. Shattuck standing by. And from what we can see, there was a pan from a NFL Network camera, J.P., and it looks like it's starting to get quite busy out there. And that just goes to reason. It's been an exciting week here with the uniforms unveiled and the draft tonight. What can you tell us?
I can tell you it's very loud. The music from the public address system, of course, the system here at Everbank was upgraded before last season. It's jamming for the first time in a long time. Nearly the whole field is covered. The actual field will be where the festivities are tonight. So all the fans are invited on the field. There are tents set up on the outside for former players that have just signed some autographs. And some of the current Jaguars, we're told, will be here right around 8 o'clock to sign some autographs as well. There are a number of food trucks on the field, too, so plenty of options to eat, to drink. There's a bar set up. It is open, not that I would know.
JP, you sound like a fan.
It's a fantastic night. I kind of want to cover the draft out here, to be quite honest with you. And plenty of time to get down here. Of course, the big screens at the stadium will have the live coverage from NFL Network of the draft and the selections from New York. So I'm sure there will be a big celebration in store here on the field tonight. I'll come back a little bit later with the latest from down here.
All right, if we can't find you, we know where to find you, in the buffet line.
Or by the beer truck.
Or by the beer truck, absolutely. Or signing autographs for all the folks who watch him on Jaguars.com. J.P. Shattuck checking in from outdoors. Certainly appreciate that. We'll hear from Tony Baselli. He is in London. We talked with him last night. We will talk with him probably on the next half hour or so. They're doing an event tonight via Sky Sports. And so with that, why don't we do this? Let's hear from Gus. I mean, let's start it off with, he was, by the way, earlier today in two different luncheons, and he made the same presentation, and I was with him in the sponsor luncheon, and he was a tremendous hit. And then I heard he was even bigger with a bigger crowd and the West Touchdown Club logs.
Well, and every time you talk to Gus Bradley, you come away even more impressed. I mean, a lot of coaches that you talk to, you feel like sometimes you're getting the same thing every time you talk to him. But, you know, Gus continues to impress me, and he certainly impressed me earlier today because, you know, he's got this vision in this little mantra that he keeps talking about to his players about just getting better. And I had to ask him about tonight and the significance of what tonight means. Gus, tonight, big night for your football team, and I know your mantra to your football team is just get better. Well, here is a great opportunity to just get better.
It's a prime opportunity, and I know we've put a lot of time into it with our scouts and with Dave, and we spent a lot of time. I go back in the process, and I, you know, right when we first got hired, we talked about the combine, the Senior Bowl, and starting the whole process.
And your eyes look a little tired. I mean, there's so much.
That's a sty.
I mean, there's so much to do.
It really
is. Head coach and general manager, when you guys were just brought in and, you know, you're trying to establish something, I mean, there's a million things to do in so little time. And here you are, biggest night of the franchise, because this is the first group of players that you're going to get to mold and to carry you forward into your era.
Right. You know what? And there has been quite a bit of things. You know, I guess there's fortunate and some unfortunate times as far as your family being here. They're still in Seattle, but it did give us the opportunity for Dave and I to really build our relationship. And I can't begin to tell you how many times we sat down and talked philosophy and vision and really to clean it up. Then we got the opportunity to do it with our mini camp. And, you know, we've also talked about draft strategy, you know, for the last couple months as well, and, you know, the type and style of players that we want to bring in.
And the strategy, as you mentioned, the type of players you want to bring in. I mean, coming from Seattle as a defensive coordinator, I mean, this is really a different level of involvement with the draft, isn't it? Because, I mean, you needed to explain to the general manager, David Caldwell, the type of players that you want to fit your system, not only you, but all your coaches.
Right. There's no doubt. I mean, the first step when you get together as a coaching staff after the hiring process is you really develop your offense and defense strategy. And you're looking at the types of players you need to fill those positions. So we try to write down the qualities and the characteristics we're looking for to give our scouts and Dave a better idea of what we're looking for to fill those positions. But you really, you know, the learning process continues as you're watching tape, because you'll have discussions about, well, this obviously is the type of player you had, so this might be a good possibility for us. And you might have discussions over that individual. And I think it really draws you closer and nearer to really what you're looking for in the style of athlete.
How do you value positions? You know, a general manager may have his philosophy, but as a head coach, how do you value different positions?
Well, I think by offense and defensive coordinator, and as a head coach, you really say in order to operate our offense, in order to operate our defense, what are the key positions to make it go? And that really starts it all off. And then after those key positions, what would you rank second? And, you know, so we've had those discussions. And then we try to gear our draft that way.
In the second pick overall, obviously Kansas City has the first pick tonight. You guys are picking second. And a few years ago, the NFL changed the system, the way that rookies are paid. So in years past, you may get real nervous about it because the cost that player may come with, that comes with that player and that pick, whereas nowadays, at least that cost is not so expensive.
That's accurate, but it's still a big pick for us, you know, in many ways, in that you don't want to make a mistake. You want to make sure that you've done all your homework. And, you know, how long is this individual going to play for you? Is he going to be a franchise-type player where he's going to put, you know, 9-10 years and give you some position depth or some position quality at a certain spot? So even though financially I know I don't look at it that much, just more of a, you know, you want to make sure when you got seven picks that you hit on all of them.
Earlier this week in the press conference, you guys talked about the chances of trading down were minimal. The reports are that many teams want to trade down. But have the phones heated up a little bit in that aspect from that press conference to tonight?
Well, I'm sure, you know, that'd be a better question to ask Dave. But I know there's been some phone calls through the time that, you know, after the combine, you know, some candid conversations with Dave. So, you know, for us to move out of that pick, I'm sure it's going to have to be a pretty good situation for us.
One good situation is that on day two and day three, you guys are picking first. When teams kind of sleep on something overnight, if you're ever going to trade down, that looks like that may be the possibility.
It sure is. It's a great position to be in for a couple reasons. One, after the first round is over, we get a chance to sit down, reevaluate some things, where we're at, who's left. And, you know, we already have a good game plan in place, but just to reevaluate it. But I'm sure we'll probably get some phone calls. But the ideal thing is, Jeff, is that you know, we want to make sure that we need some numbers. We need, you know, numbers of draft picks. But we want to make sure if we do get those numbers that they're quality people there for us to draft.
David had said that, hey, look, we look to draft for need. With your roster, I mean, it's a lot of change, obviously, from last year to where you're at right now. Is it true to say that we can take the best player because we have so many holes right now?
I think, you know what, I was really pleased with our mini camp. I was really pleased with our players and their efforts and, you know, their abilities. And we just need to create more depth and to create more competition within our team. So, yes, we, you know, we have some need areas that we need to fill, but, you know, we want to keep under the philosophy of picking the best available. And it just so happens this year that we can also maybe accomplish some need areas as well.
So David had said there are only three people that know who we're going to select with the second pick overall in the draft tonight. Have you even told your wife?
No, I haven't. I know he hasn't told his wife, so I better not tell mine. But, you know, we have a great idea, and but he's accurate in that. I know we discussed things with Shad yesterday, and we've had conversations with him. I know Dave has as well. So, you know, we really feel good about the opportunity that's in front of us.
Well, Gus, thanks a lot. Best of luck tonight. It's an exciting time.
It sure is. Appreciate it, Jeff.
You know, Gus told the crowd today at the sponsor luncheon how much he learned from Pete Carroll. I know Pete's a guy you played for, you respect greatly.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on Bradley relative to Carroll and how you see him as a young coach in the NFL?
I think both of them are very similar in that they possess a lot of positive energy and they don't waste anything or any time on negative thoughts or negative players, and I think that's going to be their mold going forward. I mean, you've been around him where he's been publicly speaking, but he's the same exact genuine guy when he sits in this chair next to you and the microphones are not on. And I think that's what's really refreshing with Gus Bradley, because he is what you see on television. He is what you hear through the microphone on radio. He's just a real, genuine, positive guy, and I think that's exactly what this team needs.
And the players have bought in, too. I mean, at the minicamp last week, you know, you guys have been around players. It's obvious when they're saying things and when they're truly meaning things. When you talk to these guys about Gus Bradley last week, the veterans on this team, you know, you hate to use the phrase bought in, but they believe in what Gus Bradley's saying right now. So that's the start.
All right, you're listening to live coverage of the 2013 NFL Draft. This is the Jaguars NFL Draft Show presented by PwC. And ladies, for the first time, the Jaguars have created a club dedicated to the experience of the female fan. Women 18 and up can join the Jaguars Women's Club. This unique program designed to connect with, provide exclusive experiences for, and engage the Jaguars female fans through updates, special offers, events, and benefits. For more info, go to jaguars.com/womensclub. We return with more live from the other side of the War Room wall here inside Everbank Field. The 2013 Jaguars NFL Draft is brought to you by Bud Light, the sure sign of a good time. Here we go. And our friends at PwC, Brian Sexton back with John Osher and Jeff Loggeman. We'll hear from J.P. Shadrick out and about what is a growing crowd on the field here for the fan experience. And, of course, we expect Tony Boselli sometime before the top of the hour in the beginning of the draft. He is going to be live on the air with Sky Sports in London. So there's all kinds of, as you would imagine, rumors, stories. And it appears that the Chiefs are going to pick Eric Fisher.
Yeah, that's the way it looks. I mean, you never say never on draft day, and you never say for sure on draft day. But these are the kind of reports that are generally true. So it looks like we all talked last night that it seemed like the Jaguars were going to take one of the two tackles. Now it seems like the tackle that the Chiefs are taking is Eric Fisher. So you would think Luke Joeckel to the Jaguars. That's what it looks like right now. If Monday was not a smokescreen.
Well, and the good thing for the Jaguars, I think they're getting a more polished left tackle, if in fact that is the pick for them. Luke Joeckel, watching him on tape, he's got great sets. He's got great balance. He's been basically a four-year starter since the day he walked in there on campus at Texas A&M. You know, and the question now becomes is, where will he play? You know, if that in fact is the pick. You know, so The story won't end after tonight.
You know, there was a lot of Twitter action, and I know you've been dealing with it, both Twitter and Ozone.
A little bit.
You know, why would you take a guy who is going to only be a right tackle? So how do you see the dynamic of him coming in? Because David Caldwell, you know, made it clear that if they draft a tackle, you know, Eugene is going to stay on the left side. From you, how hard is it for a guy who's played left for 4 years to go right?
It is very different. The sets are different. It's almost trying to go from being left-handed to right-handed.
It's tough.
When the Baltimore Ravens drafted Jonathan Ogden, they didn't play Jonathan Ogden at right tackle. They played Jonathan Ogden at left guard, or at least the same hand is down on the ground. The sets are very similar, although somewhat different. And then the next year, Tony Jones moves on, and then you know, Ogden takes over at left tackle. So, I mean, and left guard has been a question spot for the Jaguars. Could he, in fact, play guard for a year? You know, you just don't know, and we won't know. First of all, we got to find out if he is, in fact, the pick.
I would be stunned if he played guard for a year, only because of what David Caldwell said on Monday about, you know, it sounds like he believes that the trend is going to be that more tackles are interchangeable, that they're going to play similar styles, and they're going to be pass blockers on each side. It did not sound to me like if he takes a tackle, he's taking with the idea of playing on the interior.
And the St. Louis Rams are dealing a little bit with that. They ended up acquiring Jake Long in free agency, and they're moving their left tackle
Roger
to
Safford.
Right tackle,
yeah.
which I kind of think is a mistake, because I think Jake Long would be a fantastic right tackle, but obviously they didn't pay him to be a right tackle.
Well, you know, and it seemed like there, when the Jaguars were lined up with Boselli and Searcy, that there was a trend in the league to go to strong right tackles as well. The value of the right tackle was high. Now, why does it seem like that's retreated and that people don't see it as being as important, especially with the multiple fronts that we see?
Well, I think the salary cap has a lot to do with it.
Well, the salary cap is definitely part of that, but, I mean, you always want your best athlete at left tackle. That's what you're asking, why can't a guy play either side? I mean, First off, the money's better at left tackle, so the tackles want to play on the left side.
But in a passing league, isn't right tackle just as valuable?
Not necessarily.
Not yet.
No, not yet. But, I mean, it's kind of headed in that direction. I think John is right in that it's going to be headed in that direction. But most quarterbacks are right-handed. They can see the pressure coming from that side. Most teams are right-hand dominant when they run the football, so they have the tight end on the right side more times than they do on the left side. Quarterbacks are typically right-handed. They throw the ball more to their right typically than they do to the left. So, you know, I don't know. It's an interesting question, though.
If this is the pick, And there will be people that won't like it. I mean, there are people that don't like the new uniforms. I mean, that's just the way that it goes. But if this is the pick, does it necessarily say anything about Eugene Monroe's status for 2014?
Not necessarily, but, you know, it certainly makes more sense to take this pick when, if Eugene had 3 years left on his contract, this would be much more of an eye-opener. Now, it may be that this is the thought of this regime that right and left tackle will be worth the same, and maybe they pay both of these guys. Maybe they pay Eugene like that. But realistically, there's no way this isn't an issue going forward.
Well, and here's the reality. Last year in the opener at Minnesota, Eugene Monroe had a fantastic game. Mm-hmm. His best game of the year against Jared Allen.
Maybe of his 4 years.
Probably, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Probably of his 4 year career. And I think at the end of the year, his performance was a huge drop, but it dropped. You didn't see him progressively get better. We don't know what they think of Eugene Monroe.
Right.
You know, and maybe they think that there's a better option in a left tackle in this draft class. We don't know that.
I think there's also an element of, and we talked about it yesterday, this is David Caldwell's first draft. He's looking at this team with much more of a clean slate look than maybe fans are. When Dave sees this team, he's saying to himself and saying to Shad Khan, we're building through the draft. Well, to him, that starts now. So
he might not be married to the thought of Eugene Monroe.
Or not necessarily Eugene, but to anybody on the roster. He's wanting to bring in – his whole idea of this draft is, let's increase the talent level on this roster as much as we possibly can. And I think if Dave Caldwell picks Luke Jokel, as I said yesterday, he goes to bed tonight, puts his head on the pillow, and feels very good that he's got a player who is going to be a good player for a long time. And that matters when you're picking a guy.
Well, really a win-win. Because if you do, in fact, draft a left tackle, you have a guy that you can plug in there next year if you can't end up working something out with Eugene Monroe. But also, you would have a compensatory pick coming your way if you lost Eugene Monroe, and because he's probably a left tackle, the price tag is going to be high. You're talking about a very high third compensatory pick.
Yeah. Or maybe they decide to go outside the box and figure out a way to, you know,
keep
to
them both.
Work with both.
You don't know.
There's nothing wrong with having a lot of good players.
All right. We've got a lot more coming up here in the next half hour of our warm-up, and then, of course, we'll take you through the first hour of tonight's draft, because we anticipate the Jaguars picking at number 2. If something changes with that, we'll roll with the punches and keep you up to date. But right now, we're anticipating the Jaguars picking in the first half hour, and then you'll hear from David Caldwell, you'll hear from Gus Bradley, and you will hear from the Jaguars' first-round selection. I want to thank Turner Construction for being the presenting sponsor of the annual Jaguars Partners Golf Tournament, which is next month at TPC. Bottom of the hour, time for news from our colleagues over at WOKV. We break and return with more draft coverage presented by PwC on Jaguars Radio. PwC's Earn Your Future initiative is empowering students and future leaders through financial responsibility. Rick Moyer and his team at PwC pleased to sponsor the 2013 Jacksonville Jaguars NFL Draft. Here on Jaguars Radio, Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, John Osher alongside, at least for the first hour, and we certainly appreciate that. J.P. Shadrick will join us shortly, and again, we're working on Baselli. He called and checked in, and then somebody must have opened the buffet in London because we can't find him.
Imagine that.
Yeah, just go and figure that one out as we come along. So David Caldwell, I saw him earlier today at the luncheon, which I thought was different. I mean, not many general managers come out of their war room on draft day, but still very preoccupied, as you can imagine, with the things that he needs to do.
Sure, sure, but he said he slept in this morning.
Good for him.
Got a workout in.
So did I. I mean, just for the record.
nobody cares, Johnny O, about you. But I think it goes to show a calmness. I mean, if you're prepared, you're always a little bit more calm and ready for the situation that's at hand. And this is David Caldwell's first rodeo. So you got to know that there's a little bit of nerves kind of creeping in. But from what he said this morning, went very well. I'd have a hard time sleeping before my first draft ever. So, and certainly a departure from Gene Smith. Gene Smith kind of, you know, he wound a little bit of tight. Love Gene. But wound tight, you know, the security was kind of high, and David, though, very confident and relaxed about it. Did the luncheon thing and everything.
Yeah, and he did a great job. And you know, we've been trying to kind of interpret him. And does he have more Polian? Does he have more Dimitrioff? You know, what is his particular
style? He does not
style?
Have any Polian
well,
it, in him.
In a way. I mean, personality-wise, he's certainly lower.
I meant draft.
Certainly lower key.
Yeah, let's be clear
I will
about
say
that.
This. Bill was always a big believer in... He got that board set 3 or 4 days out, and it did not. And what he said was, it did not move off of that. So there was also always a calmness on draft day around there because they felt like the work had already been done. There was no juggling. There was no second guessing at that point. Once the board was set, the board was set. So I think in that sense, he probably did get a little bit of that from Bill in the sense of, okay, we're going to be prepared a few days out, and then after that, I'm not going to go back and second guess myself. So a little bit of that, but certainly. You know, not the tenseness of Bill.
No, because I mean, Bill Polian could rub people the wrong way in a hurry. A grating type personality, was rough around the edges, and David Caldwell is so much different than that. He's very personable, friendly guy, but he is a very focused guy, certainly today.
Well, and he's working with a guy in Gus Bradley that brings an immense amount of energy, and they definitely have, you know, distinct personality types. And I, you know, I'm interested to see how that dynamic works.
I had a scout tell me today they were very, very impressed with Gus's involvement and the level of ability he had as a personnel guy in terms of the questions to ask, in terms of the engagement back and forth between coaching and scouting. You know, you would think every coach has that. A lot of coaches do in various degrees. The person I talked to today spoke very highly of Gus Bradley in terms of the way he interacts with Dave Caldwell and the scouts. And his ability to get information to them so they can get this pick right.
You know, how much time, and they were clear earlier this week that they, you know, they narrowed it down to 2 guys, they're going to get one of them. How much time do you think they then spent on pick 33 and evaluating scenarios? I mean, when you've only got one team in front of you, you know, you don't have to mock it like they do when you're 22 and you're really trying to figure out every single scenario.
Well, Gus said that he was a guy that wanted to go through a whole bunch of different scenarios. I said that earlier this week, and David didn't want to do that so much.
Right.
because that kind of gives me the impression that he is kind of like polling that, you know, once it's set, it's set. But
and
Gus,
I think he's been in enough. I think he's been in enough draft rooms to know you've got your values that you want. You know that's going to take care of itself. I don't get the impression that Dave is real crazy about moving up, only because of what he said on Monday about, you know, he values picks. The sense is this team needs players. So if you're not trying to move up, then you basically sit there at 33. You take the calls. You have sort of a level that you want. You have value that you want. And so you take the calls, and if you get that value, you go. If you don't, then you've got the pick you make. So it's almost like that old Johnny Unitas line. If you know what you're doing, you don't get intercepted. If you have a plan, then you don't really get panicky when you're on the clock. You're just like, okay, if I get these calls, that's fine. If I don't, then I'm ready to pick.
Seven picks over the course of the next 3 days.
They love it to be double digits.
I was just about to ask you what you thought it needs to be.
Well, I think they would love to come out. When you consider the fact that this is all about competition right now, well, what's the best thing for competition? A lot of good young players. So they'd love to have as many picks as they could possibly get. You would guess they would love to have 10 drafted guys in camp next week. Is that possible? Who knows? But I think that would be their ideal.
All right. A big crowd starting to gather outside as part of the 2013 Jaguars NFL Draft brought to you by Bud Light. The sure sign of a good time. Here we go out to J.P. Shadrick, who is standing by. But the question is, what are you standing by? The beer tent? By the food line? By the cheerleaders? Where are you right now, big fella?
Well, answer number three is correct, by the cheerleaders. That's probably the safest and the best place to be, I think. It is quite a festival atmosphere out here, as we said before. The tents all around the perimeter of the field, and everybody is on the field. It is much more crowded than it was when I spoke with you guys earlier. Shad Khan, the owner of the Jags, was just here. He was walking through the barricade, taking photos, signing autographs, talking to fans. The zip line has started to go now. They've installed a zip line kind of ride thing tonight. They have a rock wall out here too, so there's a lot of other things going on off to the side. The food truck lines are moving, and quite a scene tonight. Some of the former Jags are back out now signing autographs. This is the new Roar cheerleading crew, by the way. It is their introduction for the evening, and like we said before, at the top of the hour, 8 o'clock, some of the current Jaguars are expected to be out to sign autographs as well.
Hey, JP, when I came in today, I was very impressed. I mean, there was tailgating going on well before the gates were opened up to gain access to the stadium. That impressed the heck out of me. I mean, people are into this draft thing now. I mean, it's become so popular.
They are. Lots C, D, and E, from what I were told, were pretty packed pretty early in the day today. I mean, the gates opened here about 6. Of course, the draft doesn't start till 8, so they've been at it for a while, just like on a regular game day, which we love to see. And most of them have made their way inside, I believe, right now. And I will tell you guys, I did hear the kind of the event after the draft pick, after the number 2 pick, immediately from the war room, Shad Khan, Dave Caldwell, and Gus Bradley will come straight to the field and address this crowd right away, right after the pick. So if you're on the way, you better get here before the pick if you want to hear the brass have a chat on the field with you. So,
JP,
a lot going on. It's a beautiful night out here.
Did you get any sense of what the fans' hope is with the selection at number 2 overall?
It's varied. I mean, some people want to trade. A lot of people want to trade, I think, more than take a pick, to be quite honest with you. The football fanatics among them want more picks. I believe that's kind of the prevailing sentiment out here. If not, I think some of the people have heard the rumors that Fisher's going to go 1. That kind of creeped out on Twitter a little while ago, or at least that Fisher had been, Jokel rather, had been told that Fisher's going 1. If you want to believe that, then a lot of people feel it's going to be Jokel. But I think still a lot of people just want those picks, and I think you guys were talking about that before. Like to get double-digit picks out of this draft if they can somehow. And whether that's tonight or tomorrow, I don't think it really matters. They just want more.
All right, J.P. Shadrick, we will check in with you. Are we done with we're done with you.
Careful on that rock wall, J.P.
See you guys.
And hold on tight on the zip line, for sure. All right, that's J.P. Shadrick. We certainly appreciate his contribution from outside where the crowd is gathering. You know, this has been a unique week. It's not often that a team changes uniforms, and not as drastically as this team did anyway. In the same week that you have the draft and your general manager and coach host a couple of luncheons on draft day. I mean, if you can't see this franchise opening up and reaching out and pulling people in, you may be missing the biggest story of the week.
No, well, you guys were here in 95. To me, it's got that fresh building a foundation feel. You don't want to call it an expansion season because it's not. But there is that feel that this is the starting point. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but I feel that.
Yeah, it almost feels like this is the first year of a new era in Jaguars football. And there's been so many other slogans that have been used in years past. But, I mean, this truly feels like the new era of the Jaguars.
I think that's why picking a guy like Fisher, or I'm sorry, Jokel, makes sense. We talked earlier, are you looking at your current roster? I think right now you just build. You just bring in talent and you act like you're starting from scratch because in a very real sense you are.
All right. I was going to go to start singing the Stand Up for What You Love. It's Jaguars football theme since you talked about so many of them throughout the years. It's new. It's exciting, and it's fun to be down here, folks. So if you're out and about, get on down and get on the field and enjoy part of the experience. And if you're not, thanks for tuning in this evening. You're listening to live coverage of the 2013 Jacksonville Jaguars NFL Draft presented by PwC here on Jaguars Radio. All right, we want to thank Turner Construction for being the presenting sponsor of the annual Jaguars Partner Golf Tournament, which is held next month at TPC. Welcome back to our coverage of the 2013 Jaguars NFL Draft, presented by PwC, Brian Sexton, John Osher, and Jeff Loggeman. And John, you know, big picture here, because we've got you, you know, through the top of the hour here, and then you've got to go do Jaguars.com stuff.
Live on Jaguars.com.
Live on Jaguars.com.
Did you ever think you'd be a TV star?
I keep waiting for that.
You're not. I see you on the on .com all the time. That's TV these days.
It's
so many people are in
an amazingly rapidly changing medium. No question.
No doubt. So at the end of this weekend, when it's all wrapped up on Saturday night, you know, maybe Sunday by the time they get all the undrafted, what do you expect?
Well, it's always hard to know what form it's going to take because you know the middle hours of day two and day three are always kind of turn into a blur when you're covering it, but. You wouldn't be surprised if by 6 o'clock on Sunday night, Saturday night, that we're talking about the theme of the draft is that maybe the Jaguars couldn't trade back first round, second round, but that in those rounds 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, that the theme was them getting back and trying to add some more young talent. I don't know that it's possible in the first round. I don't know that it's not, but it sounds like it's going to be difficult. After that, you would think that they're going to get back and try to pick up some more picks if it's at all possible.
Well, and from the interview with Gus Bradley that we heard a little bit earlier, he talked about you know the first pick of day two and the first pick of day three, and then they believe very strongly that they're going to have options of moving back and acquiring more picks there, which would be good for this football team. The other thing,
and if you get one each out of that, then all of a sudden you're up to nine. So I think that's sort of – you've always heard the buzz, yeah, we'd like to get double digits. That would get him close to that. So go ahead, Jeff.
And then the other thing, too, is that when the draft wraps up Saturday, it is not over with.
Right.
You know, if you're an undrafted rookie or an undrafted college free agent and you've got an option, your agent is going to try to find you the best place that you have the chance of making a roster. And whether it's real or not, the perception is that the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to have the best opportunity of an undrafted guy to make a roster. So I guarantee you that this process is certainly not over Saturday night for David Caldwell and his staff, and that the phone lines will be worked very hard, and some of the premium undrafted guys will opt to come here.
Well, and taking that a step further, I've not talked to anybody about this specifically, but I would be shocked if those conversations haven't already taken place. There's a recruiting process with guys who are in the 6th, 7th, and beyond rounds, and I am sure that the conversations have taken place between guys who have scouted those areas saying, look, we don't know where you're going to get drafted, but here's the situation here. We've got some money to spend because that matters. In a collegiate free agency, you're not talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars signing bonuses, but you can make a difference with signing bonuses. Some of that cap space, not a significant number, but some of it, this is a team that's got a little money to spend in collegiate free agency, but more to the point of what Jeff said, there are opportunities here. And the players at those levels, a lot of players have already been told this is a place where there's opportunity.
Do you suppose that when they get down into the bottom of the fifth, the sixth, the seventh round, that they might not trade all that much because they know they've got that edge in collegiate free agency. And how different is the grade on a bottom of the sixth round guy and a guy at the top of your college free agency?
Well, board? Not much. So, I mean, because they kind of get all lumped in right around the same ballpark there. So, I mean,
just
I'm sure that
there,
there's going to be plenty of undrafted guys that they may have a seventh, sixth round, fifth round grade on. You know, but but David Caldwell's talked about drafting for need, and I'm sure that he's going to try to fill some holes when he gets into the latter rounds. And so they will have guys that they will be calling who they felt was a draftable guy.
You would think the key points are what you just mentioned, Brian, or Jeff. The first pick of the second round, the first pick of the fourth round, you would think those would be the action points, the intrigue points that, hey, if we can get back, if we can pick up a pick here, a pick next year, whatever. This is a process. Whatever equity we can pick up, whatever opportunity of players we can pick, you know, we can pick up, we will. But there's no question. Every team talks about collegiate free agency being important. I mean, scouts love it. GMs always talk about it. Here this year, that is so much more than lip service because it's going to be a big deal here this year.
All right. And the intriguing part to me is that, you know, many people assumed that Luke Jokel was going to be the first overall pick, and we'd mentioned earlier the reports are is that Eric Fisher may be, in fact, the choice of the Kansas City Chiefs. Does that change the tradability dynamic of that second overall pick with Luke Jokel all of a sudden falling, if that is in fact the case?
You know, if you follow Twitter, and if you don't, by the way, folks, you are missing one of the great ways to follow a draft because there's so much information coming out in 140 characters on Twitter.
And misinformation.
You're right. It goes both ways on there. But it really looks like there are a lot of people selling, trying to sell out of their spot, and not as many people interested in moving up. You know, I mean,
that's been the trend. And that's been what you've heard about this draft all along. People would love to move down because there's good players through number 40. I also heard a couple people tell me again today, this is a deep draft through about the fourth round. So all teams want to get back. If they can give up their premium pick and get a couple in that 2 through 40 range and maybe add one or two in that third or fourth range, they feel like they're adding good players and not giving up a whole lot on the front end. The problem is when everybody knows that, then who wants to come up? So you've heard talk that because of the salary cap, there might be activity at the top of the first round. You've heard the same thing the opposite way, that because of the nature of this draft with 2 through 40 being so equal, that there won't be much moving at all. So
but
we're about to find out.
Here's the thing that I believe that makes that second pick possibly tradable. And that you look at all the different positions. Corner, there doesn't really seem to be any premium guys at corner.
Right.
Safety, it's not a non-premium position, period. Linebacker, there's three or four guys that all could mix them up in a bag and pull them out
Jordan,
three different ways, and they could be drafted that way.
Kivius Mingo.
It's the same thing with defensive tackle. It's the same way with defensive end for the most part. You got a couple different guards on there, and that's really a non-premium
right.
position. You know, so if there's two positions that I think, well, in fact, you'll see trades for three, quarterback, tight end, and left tackle.
Yeah, the only thing that throws a wrench into that is there's a growing perception that Lane Johnson is a really good option. So you wonder if somebody...
Yeah, but he's a one-year starter, and a lot of people are going to be nervous about that.
That's what you wonder.
All right, folks, got to take a quick break, come back, wrap up the first hour, and get ready for the start of the 2013 NFL Draft, presented by PwC, only on Jaguars Radio. All right, welcome back. Coverage of the 2013 NFL Draft. The Jaguars in particular here on Jaguars Radio, presented by our friends at PwC. Brian Sexton alongside my broadcast partner, Jeff Loggeman. We are just moments away from the draft getting started. We'll hear from Roger Goodell to kick things off. And then I don't, and we never do, know what Kansas City will do in terms of time. I mean, if they know their guy and they're not getting out of that slot, do they take 1 minute? Do they take all 10?
Well, if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, you've got a new general manager there, Dorsey, who came in from Green Bay to work with Andy Reid. He's going to milk the clock as much as he can to hope that something may pop up as far as a trade. And I expect David Caldwell to do something very similar. You know, you've got a lot of that in the first 10 picks. You know, the teams that are drafting in the top 10 are drafting there for a reason. They have been very good, and they've made changes. And a lot of those changes are at the general manager position.
You know, that's a very good point. There's a lot of guys that we're just not exactly sure how they're going to pull things off. Tell me, from your perspective, do you have a sense of David Caldwell? I mean, it's not like he spent a lot of the time he's been here, 108, 109 days now, out in the media. But based on your conversations with him, people who know him, Do you have a sense of what he's doing and how he's doing it?
No. I mean, that's a mystery. And I think that is part of the intrigue of the Jaguars draft class this year, is that how will David Caldwell operate? I mean, as a person, he's very personable and he's a very nice guy. He's a joy to talk to. But as a general manager, you just don't have a track record. You know, so how do you try to predict? And I think that's one of the things that the so-called experts this year, you know, whether it be, you know, Pro Football Talk or whether it be the NFL Network or ESPN, you know, you look at them and they've changed their mock drafts probably more so than any other year. And I think part of that is that the top 40 picks, many people say that it's a good top 40, but there's not an elite 5 or 10 guys. But then also because of the fact that there's so many new general managers and head coaches.
All right, we're just at 8 o'clock, and so the draft is beginning, and when the commissioner approaches the podium, we'll grab him. You know, one thing I like that they've done is they played it low-key and smart in free agency. And the reason why is if they had gone and thrown a bunch of money at Darryl Smith, and they're sitting there at pick 33, and Arthur Brown, the linebacker from Kansas State, who fits about there, maybe a little higher, maybe a little bit lower, all of a sudden now you can't go and take Arthur Brown because you've put a lot of money up against Darryl Smith. They've made good, solid decisions in free agency, which leaves them free and clear to pick who they want, where they want.
Well, I don't think that they're done in free agency. I think that they will participate again in free agency after the draft, where the price point has come down, and also once they find out what they've drafted and where are the holes that they need to fill going into a training camp and a mandatory mini camp that's going to be in June. So I like the approach, and that, you know, be smart with your money early on. Don't overspend on guys, because that typically is what happens early on in free agency. Wait till after the draft. The price comes down a little bit. Find the holes that you need to fill, and then fill them.
There are a lot of guys out there.
You know, Tyson Klebo's, I think, is a perfect example. If you don't, in fact, end up drafting a tackle in this draft, a guy that you feel comfortable with, you know, plugging in on the right side, then all of a sudden you maybe, in fact, go make a phone call to Tyson Klebo, who David Caldwell knows from his time in Atlanta.
You know, I think that's probably one of the arguments that we've heard from people who say, hey, whoa, hold on, drafting an offensive tackle. You know, there's pass rushers up there. Why would you take an offensive tackle when he's only going to play on the right side? You know, you can understand the reasoning behind that with a pass rush that's been as anemic as this, anemic's being nice, the way that it has been around here lately.
Well, and you could make the argument, if you're looking and evaluating this football team, where are the strengths and where do you need a lot of numbers to really get it back kind of at a, playing at a, or performing at a peak level? I think you've got some weapons on offense. You've got a third-year quarterback coming into his third year where you expect the biggest jump in his development.
Can you still do that, though?
You've got a running back. I mean, so if you're going to get better as a team, the easiest way to do that may be to solidify that offensive line so that the other components, the skill position players, can perform the way they're capable of.
You know, I get it. It's year three. He has to perform. Gabbert has to perform. That's a high expectation for a guy going into his third year with his third head coach, third offensive coordinator.
Well, you know, I'm pretty confident about him because, you know, there's some numbers, and we're going to get into this at a future point with Jaguars this week, because there are some numbers that you can evaluate on Blaine Gabbert as far as the amount of time that he had to throw, how his performance was under pressure relative to other quarterbacks around the league. And a lot of people, all they want to do is to just, you know, bash Blaine Gabbert. But if you look at the numbers a little bit closer, his performance is better than you think.
So you're saying it makes the case then to go grab a guy on the right-hand side who, if he's that good.
What would make this team better faster? One pass-rushing defensive end or to solidify an offensive line?
Yeah, see, I think the offensive line.
Where's the strength? I mean, the strength of this football team right now, Cecil Shorts, Justin Blackmon, Maurice Jones-Drew, and Mercedes Lewis, if he can perform at the level that he did 2 years ago as a receiving tight end. That, I think, is how you get better faster, by solidifying those guys up front to allow the skill position guys to do what they do best.
All right, flip side, defensive line now. And, again, the pass rush has been very bad. And that's, again, being nice. But Andre Branch showed up, looked in pretty good shape at camp.
Missed the last day of minicamp, though. They held him out.
Okay.
He
looks long, lean, well, athletic. The things that we saw when he was in shorts last year, I understand that. But that's a guy that he's second-year player. Second-round draft pick, there's obviously some ability there. Babin is a guy who can still, you know, step in and play some. You know, Mincy, if he doesn't have to play 60 snaps a game. There's a lot of different guys on that side of the ball. Here's the commissioner to start the 2013 draft.
And welcome, everybody, to the 2013 NFL Draft. Thank you to all the fans here in Radio City and those of you watching around the world. We appreciate your tremendous support. Let's remember tonight those we lost last week in the explosion in West Texas. And we remember the people of Boston, the victims, first responders, law enforcement, and other heroes. We stand with Boston, and we stand strong for our freedom. Okay, before we kick off the 2013 NFL Draft, we're going to start the clock on another big event, the New York, New Jersey Super Bowl next February. I'm joined by two legendary quarterbacks who know what it means to this area to be in the Super Bowl. Super Bowl MVPs Joe Namath and Phil Sims.
You are officially on the clock.
All right. Joe Namath, ladies and gentlemen. I think that's all we really need to say.
I'm just glad Susie Colbert wasn't in that shot.
I was waiting for you to say that. I don't even think she's on site. I think she got out of there. Here's the commissioner.
The 2013 NFL Draft is officially open. The Kansas City Chiefs are now on the clock.
All right, so they have 10 minutes to make their
selection.
And
they've been on the clock a long time.
Since the Super Bowl was done, they have been on the clock. So when you look at Kansas City, they were 2-14 last year. They had a terrible quarterback situation with Matt Cassel. They obviously had the tragedy there in December with the linebacker. It changed the coach, changed the general manager, cleaned the whole nine yards out. However, they did have six guys who earned Pro Bowl on a very bad.
And really, Brian, I think that they took a great step in acquiring Alex Smith for their second round pick. And so I think that's going to help them immensely because Alex Smith seems to have turned a corner in his career. Because if you look at the strength of the Kansas City Chiefs, it's on their offense. I mean, they have some fantastic weapons on offense. They've got a running back who can flat out fly even after a knee surgery. They've got a very talented tight end who also is going to be 2 years removed from a knee surgery. Talented wide receiver core. You know, so, I mean, that's a football team with Andy Reid's offensive expertise. If they can get a guy at the trigger and then get the guys up front playing a little bit better, I think they're going to be a good football team. But the big question with them is what will they do with Brandon Albert, who has been in trade rumors with the Miami Dolphins?
Well, and obviously they didn't pull the trade off today, and the talk was it would be a second-round pick, which would come in 34.
Maybe, because the Miami Dolphins have 2 second-round picks, and the Chiefs want the higher of the two.
Okay.
That's
all right.
Supposedly the
rumor.
Well,
that makes sense. I forget. I was giving you Kansas City second-round pick. I got to give you Miami's to make that one happen. So if you're looking at Kansas City, the offensive line, you know, we now know their offensive line coach Andy Heck, he's been around there. Brandon Albert's there. Would you hesitate at all if you're Andy Reid, not having Brandon Albert traded, to just go a different direction?
Well, I think Kansas City, I mean, in a perfect scenario for them is I think Brandon Albert is more of a natural right tackle than he is a left tackle.
Virginia guy, you know him.
But, I mean, you're talking a franchised guy, you know, $9 million on the books for that's a lot of money to pay a right tackle. I mean, you just can't afford to pay a right tackle that kind of money anymore the way the salary cap era is working. So it's going to be an interesting pick for the Kansas City Chiefs. Again, you know, it's repeating this, you know, this is a new regime in Kansas City, a new general manager with John Dorsey
and
he comes from Green Bay.
And he comes from the Ron Wolf school, which is you build up front.
You build up front and you build through the draft, although they did end up trading a pick for a quarterback they feel is going to help them out.
Well, and it's a football team, as we mentioned, that has had six guys in the last year play in the Pro Bowl, so there's some talent there. You know, this might be the team that goes from 2-14 to 8-8, 9-7.
Could.
You know, if Alex Smith comes in and plays at a high level and Andy Reid's offense clicks, you know, they've got some guys on the defensive side of the ball, you know, that can really get after it.
Good linebacker, got a good safety. They've got a really good defensive end and Tom Bahali. But they've got some holes on defense other than that. Yeah. You know,
Eric Berry's coming back from a knee.
The drafting of the Kansas City Chiefs over the last couple years raised serious eyebrows. You know, and unfortunately, two head coaches kind of took the fall for that. Whereas Scott Pioli, who was the general manager there, I think is what you really have to question, because his first draft pick overall, the defensive tackle out of LSU, made people scratch their heads around the league.
Instead of taking Matt Ryan.
From day one, how in the world could you not draft Matt Ryan? How could you not do that?
Well, and he thought he was smarter than everyone else. And that, by the way, was the knock on him in Kansas City, having family there and knowing it. You know, no one ever really felt that comfortable with him. He came in from the Bill Belichick system and from New England. And that's a town, by the way, that never really accepted Carl Peterson for all the years he was there. They called him East Coast Carl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was an East Coast guy. He wasn't a Midwesterner. So now you bring in this guy, and Pioli's system never really worked. And so, you know, now you got Dorsey, who comes down from, he's been around, but, Midwestern guy. And then Andy Reid comes in, and he once coached at the University of Missouri, so he kind of knows the system. And here they go with the opportunity to really strengthen their line. They've got their choice, Fisher or Jokel. Who would you select based on the tape you've watched?
You know, I like both players. If you want a guy who's going to step in and play better right away, then I think you're going to take a Jokel. If you want to have a guy that probably has more upside, then I would take Fisher. You know, Tony Boselli, I thought, was spot on in his evaluation last night when he talked about those two guys. Fisher is a very athletic guy. He moves probably a little bit better than Jokel. Jokel's been playing it for so long. I mean, he's a junior coming out, but since day one when he was at Texas A&M, he was a starter. 39 starts at Texas A&M. I mean, so he's got more experience. He's got more, I guess you could say, savvy in the way he plays the position and the way he takes his angles and his steps and his footwork is a little bit more polished, but I think Fisher has more upside.
Big school, small school matter to you? You've got a guy in Jokel that played in the Big 12 for a couple of years and in the Southeastern Conference last year. Fisher played in the MAC.
Yeah, and
But he played well in the Senior Bowl.
I agree with David Caldwell. You know, Central Michigan, you know, many people would call that a smaller school, but they played the Michigans, they played the Iowas, they played the Michigan States. I mean, so they've played a lot of higher caliber teams. Now, is it the same level that Jokel faced in the SEC? Absolutely no way.
Right.
Because the speed on defense,
LSU, Alabama,
particularly
Florida,
the perimeter of those defenses on the defensive end position and linebacker position is a lot better in the SEC.
And when you look at a guy like Jokel and Fisher, does one of them project to the right side better? I mean, if the Jaguars are looking at Eugene Monroe on the left side in 2013, who do they hope is sitting there? Is one guy maybe better suited to step over and play the right side in his rookie season? Because you talked a little bit about
it. Well, I think they both could do it. If I had to pick one guy to play the right side, it would probably be Eric Fisher, just because he's still relatively new to that position and playing. Whereas Jokel's been a left tackle. I mean, heck, when he was coming out of high school, he was like the top recruit coming out of Texas that there was. I mean, he was highly rated, highly talented, left tackle, left tackle, left tackle, whereas Fisher kind of came in. He played, a little basketball, I believe,
sure,
at Central Michigan. So, the old saying, it's harder to teach an old dog new tricks. And, Jokel would be the older dog in this case because that's all he's ever really played.
You know, there have been some stars that have come off the top of the draft board at left tackle: Tony Boselli, John Ogden, Walter Jones.
But before you go any further, just not to interrupt you, Jokel looks very similar.
He does.
To Tony Boselli.
You're absolutely right.
In his face, in his appearance. And just
No, you're right. But so early on, right, back in the 90s, you had Boselli, you had Ogden, you had Orlando Pace, you had Walter Jones. I mean, you had some Hall of Fame caliber,
probably
all those guys.
Probably the best era of left tackle that there's ever been in the National Football League.
But, recently, I mean, Jake Long was let go by Miami, and money had something to do with it, injuries. Eugene Monroe has been a good player here. But
not to the level of any of those guys you've mentioned.
Well, and you're talking about a guy that was, in many respects, the second-best tackle on the board.
I don't think there's a left tackle in the game today.
Joe Thomas?
No.
Nope. Cleveland?
Nope. There's not a left tackle in the game today, and I'm not an old guy trying to say, boy, way back when it was so much better. I honestly believe that those tackles that you mentioned, You know, the Walter Jones. And I don't want to say Orlando Pace so much because I think Orlando Pace will be probably equal to a Joe Thomas.
Okay.
But Walter Jones, Jonathan Ogden, and Tony Boselli, those three guys are better when they were in their primes than any left tackle in the game today.
What about the guy in New York, the Jets, DeBrickashaw Ferguson? I mean, he was
a solid left tackle, but he's not performing at the level. He's a little bit better than Brandon Albert, but he's not playing at that level. Walter Jones was an absolute beast in Seattle, but the problem about notoriety for Walter Jones was that he played for Seattle when they weren't winning.
Away.
Whereas Ogden obviously won a Super Bowl. We knew him very well. People in Jacksonville knew him well because he was a division opponent. And obviously everybody knows Tony very well.
Sure. What about Ryan Clady over in Denver?
Good player, but not the level of those three guys.
All right, we're seeing that the Chiefs have made their pick, and as soon as the commissioner approaches the podium, we will share that one with you. And obviously, I mean, it would be a stunning upset if it's anyone other than one of the two offensive tackles, though, you know, I mean, if there's a pass rusher out there that makes everyone drool, it would be Ziggy Ansah.
I don't think there's any doubt that it's going to be a left tackle because you've already offended your starting left tackle with trade talks right now. So you've got to be able to go ahead and pull the trigger on a left tackle if you're the Kansas City Chiefs.
And we'll find out exactly which one it is. And then the Jaguars will be on the clock. And remember, after the Jaguars make their selection, we expect to hear from Gus Bradley, David Caldwell, and the pick in fairly short order. We're waiting on the commissioner right now with the first pick in the draft. And boy, it seems like, you know, finally the silly season is over. The mock drafts, all of it can go away, and we can just focus now on how this first round rolls out here. So here's Commissioner Roger Goodell with the first overall selection from the Kansas City Chiefs.
With the first pick in the 2013 NFL draft, the Kansas City Chiefs select Eric Fisher, tackle, Central Michigan.
All right. So the reports earlier this afternoon that the Chiefs had made that selection were correct. And the young man from Central Michigan, who most people felt was a first-round talent when the Senior Bowl started, but climbed with stunning performances at the Senior Bowl, at the Combine, in workouts, 6'7 and a half, 310 pounds. Big man, very athletic, and logs everywhere you look. I mean, when they talk about this guy, they talk about his ceiling and his upside.
Well, and his versatility. I mean, this is the guy that I preferred to play right tackle because he had, in fact, played some games at right tackle in college. But this is a guy also that was a former basketball player, great athleticism. He's got size. His 40 time was a little bit better than Jokel's by about 2/10, maybe 2.5 tenths of a second. So many people believe that he is the better athlete. But most people will tell you that Jokel is the better left tackle today. But, you know, with drafting, it's all about projection. And obviously the Kansas City Chiefs feel that he can project as a better player in the future.
You know, we have heard around here the last couple of years because of former general manager Gene Smith's proclivity for those small school guys. Oh, you can't take the small school guys. You got to take the guys against the big competition. But, you know, it was almost unfair how many people came out and said this guy is terrific and he's from the MAC and he's number one overall, which makes him the highest ever player from the Mid-America Conference.
Well, and I think one thing that really helped him is that people are a little bit leery about grading a player from what they perceive as a small school. But I think Fisher did the smart thing. He participated in the All-Star games, and I think it was the Senior Bowl that he just absolutely wowed the scouts because you're going against players that are the best in the country. You know, for example, when I went to the All-Star games, I played in the blue-gray game, not considered a premier All-Star game. But I said, look, I got to take this opportunity to show what I can do. And then I went to the East-West Shrine game, and I played defensive end, outside linebacker, middle linebacker, nose tackle. I was able to make what I considered a huge jump in my draft status by participation in that East-West Shrine game, and I think Eric Fisher accomplished the same thing at the Senior Bowl.
All right, the Jaguars are on the clock right now, and they are picking second for the first time since they took Kevin Hardy back in the 96 draft, and obviously they took Tony Boselli, number two overall in the 1995 draft. So, you know, they're sitting in there right now with the opportunity for the first time since 1995 to take a left tackle at number two, and so the comparisons will be made to Tony Boselli.
I mean, for a lot of reasons.
Jokel's a competitor, so he'll probably embrace that.
Well, and Jokel certainly has, if he is in fact the pick, he's got a pedigree. His brother plays quarterback, at Texas A&M. His dad played football at Texas A&M. You know, so, I mean, this guy has a football pedigree, and the comparisons will come. Obviously, the second pick overall, and then also the similarities in the appearance of Jokel to Tony Boselli. It's almost eerie.
So what do you look for in a guy who can step in and play left tackle right away? You say he's more polished. When you watch the tape, what were you looking for? Knee
just
bend?
Just footwork. I mean, footwork to me is where you see if a guy is polished when he plays left tackle. The way Jokel sets, for example, I think at times Eugene Monroe can be a little bit sloppy in his footwork as far as where his first step needs to be in relation to where the defender is aligned. Jokel seems to take very smart steps with his footwork and is anticipating the angle and knowing where the alignment is and knowing how to be in the best position with that first step. You know, and the one thing that really stood out in my mind was when Texas A&M played Florida. Obviously, the Florida Gators have a defensive tackle that's very highly touted. Many people consider him, he's the best defensive player in the draft, in Sharif Floyd. Jokel had to block Sharif Floyd multiple times in that game, and Jokel clearly got the best of him.
Jokel is a big, powerful guy. The thing that I like about him is his the guys, and Gus Bradley talked about, not him, but in general, top competitor. I mean, a guy, he's a twin. I'm a twin. I know you have to fight for your food. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, you're a younger brother. You know, with an older brother, what it's like. That competitive spirit goes through him every single day. I like the competitiveness because I remember watching you and Boselli go at each other before you almost struck his knee.
Yeah.
inside joke, folks. In Stevens Point, Wisconsin, back in 1995. And, you know, what were your thoughts on him early on? And what will you look for from a competitive standpoint from Jokel, if that's the pick?
Well, I'll never forget, and that, you know, when you went against Tony early on, he was very similar to what I see in Jokel, in that his footwork, he was just a natural, light on his feet tackle. But a lot of tackles that are light on their feet and good with their feet, they just don't have the anchor to handle the power, and Tony could do both. And then once we got the pads on, the competitiveness, the way his footwork was just so spot on, his hands were so developed, and I see a lot of that in Jokel. You know, Jokel's a guy that's played a lot. Tony played a lot at USC. So now, I'm not saying that Jokel has the capability of reaching the level of play in the National Football League that Tony Boselli can or did, because that's not easy to accomplish. But he's got some similarities.
So if the pick is Jokel, and there's 3 minutes left for the Jaguars on the clock, and the networks are all at TV, commercial timeout, so we'll expect that this will probably go all the way down to the wire, barring a trade. How much does it strengthen the offensive line when you look at the interior? Does it allow you to take a guy like Cam Bradfield, who's an athletic guy that you like, and try him out at guard?
I think Cam Bradfield is a little bit of a project, because I think he has big upside. I mean, this guy has great feet. When the first day that he came in, he played left side, backing up, and then he played the backup. Started on the right side last year, so he's got experience in both sides. And so you've got a guy that could automatically become a swing man if, in fact, you draft Jokel and you play Jokel on the right side. A backup tackle, because on game days, typically you have seven active offensive linemen and have one guy that can play either tackle spot that you would feel real good about. That's a huge positive, and it will allow everybody else to, you know, you could kind of see what's left and say, here's what we need to do in the middle with the rest of these guys.
All right, well, the pick is in. And the ESPN is back. The NFL Network is still at break. And so we will not have this until they come back with the second overall pick. But, I mean, can you anticipate anything other than Jokel at this point? I mean, it just – we talked and talked. It makes so much sense.
I could see something completely different happening. But because you just don't know. You just don't know. But as I said last night, you know, reading between the lines – and that the owner, Jaguars owner Shad Khan, talked about, you know, the pick doesn't have to be sexy. Well, offensive line is not sexy. And then David Caldwell talking about Central Michigan, he considers a big school because they played the bigger schools. Those things kind of point to offensive tackle in my mind when I heard that.
All right. So, again, we are awaiting the pick. It is in. The Jaguars apparently have not traded it out. And they're showing the war room right now. So here, well, we do not have the commissioner at this point. We thought that was him walking across the stage. So you look at the Jaguars the last couple of years, draft choices, and you've got a quarterback, a receiver, a defensive lineman, an offensive tackle. I mean, they have to hit on this one. You want that guy at the top of that draft because you hope to not be picking this high again.
Yeah, and you look at those past picks, some of them you feel good about and some of them certainly not.
Here's the commissioner. Pick.
With the second pick in the 2013 NFL draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Luke Joeckel, tackle, so Texas A&M.
Tackle. It just made so much sense. This was the only place where he said that he visited Joeckel. And he's a guy who said that he really enjoyed his visit with Gus Bradley, and that's a guy that people would want to play for. Hey, you know, we're watching the reaction from the crowd out there right now, and most people understand. And I think Gus Bradley and David Caldwell and Shad Khan have done a very good job in describing where they were and what they were going to do in terms of building this franchise.
Well, and you know that the only visit that Luke Joeckel took was here to Jacksonville, which is kind of surprising. I mean, you would have thought that he would have taken visits to Kansas City, maybe Cleveland, maybe the Oakland Raiders, all the other teams that were drafted in the top five, but the only visit that he had to a team was here in Jacksonville.
You know, and I would be interested to know, and I'm not sure whether David Caldwell will share it with us or not, but I would be interested to know how many teams were trying to get to a position to select Joeckel.
Well, I don't know if we'll ever know that.
Yeah.
You know, because war rooms very rarely release the information as what happened. Because you kind of say, okay, this is what happened. This is what we're going to live with. We're not going to talk about what ifs. You know, because that the general managers don't like doing that.
They've got the new jersey there, and he's holding it up right now. And you can see, I mean, we're talking about a big, powerful guy. And, you know, the thing that they're talking about now, because I've watched this video, is just how he is able to redirect, you know, and catch things in traffic, how smart of a football player he is.
Well, and he's very polished, and he also is a junior coming out. You know, a lot of people don't talk much about that, so this is still a very young man when it comes to physical development. He's still got plenty of room to grow, but at the same time, because he's a young man, most people would think that, well, he doesn't have the experience. He's got a wealth of experience, 39 starts at the college level.
And a guy who will step in, you would assume, and be the right tackle here, and will ask David Caldwell when he arrives, and we expect to hear from him shortly, and Gus Bradley about their pick. Should we take a break here? Let's do that. Let's get a break, get it out of the way. When we come back, we'll continue with our thoughts on Luke Joeckel, the Jaguars' first-round selection in the 2013 NFL Draft, presented by PwC. Well, PwC's Earn Your Future initiative is empowering students and future leaders through financial responsibility. PwC, pleased to sponsor the 2013 Jacksonville Jaguars NFL Draft. Brian Sexton back with Jeff Loggeman. And we expect to hear from Gus Bradley, from Dave Caldwell, and from Luke Joeckel sometime soon.
Let me. I want to read this little snippet from Nolan Naraki, who puts together this Pro Football Weekly draft publication. And many general managers and former general managers around the league will tell you that this is probably the best thing that you can get from a newsstand as far as opinion on NFL potential NFL players. And this is the summary on Luke Joeckel. Quote, a dependable, highly skilled pass-blocking technician. Joeckel grades out as well as anyone in this year's draft class and has a rare makeup that will drive him to be successful. A scheme versatile, day one starter capable of stepping into the starting lineup immediately and safeguarding a franchise quarterback for the next decade plus. A can't-miss, high-floor, high-reward pick whose best football is ahead of him.
Well, that's glowing praise. How can you beat that?
I mean, that's good stuff. You know, they actually have him rated as their top player. In their scouting assessment, they gave him a grade of 7.0, whereas they gave Eric Fisher a grade of 7.6. So this is one of the most respected publications. It's been around the longest out of any of them, and I'm a big fan of it, and I think their information is good and it's spot on.
So left to right, the Jaguars' offensive line looks like this. Eugene Monroe, left guard to be determined, Brad Meester, Uche Nwaneri, and Luke Joeckel.
Possibly. I mean, that's what you expect,
sure.
Because that's what David Caldwell has talked about.
Perhaps
Will
Rackley, left guard.
Yeah, they could play, you know, a tackle at right tackle. Then for how long, you don't know, you know. And Will, all of a sudden, you know, you get to camp and make it competitive. You know, the head coach had talked about making things uncomfortable. But he used that. He didn't want to use the term anxious. He just said uncomfortable. And I think that this would make the situation for Eugene Monroe uncomfortable. And I'm okay with that. Hey, look.
He's going into a contract year.
Show it. You've got a great opportunity to win the job, to be the left tackle, and to get to free agency. If that is, in fact, the case, you know, for him. Maybe the team wants to keep him. Maybe this football team views Luke Jokel as a long-term right tackle, and then maybe in the future, if they can't re-sign Eugene Monroe, as him being the left tackle eventually.
It seems to be the best of both worlds because you've got options.
But as I said before, if you wanted to make this team better, to solidify that offensive line, to allow Cecil Shorts and Justin Blackman and Maurice Jones-Drew the best, it is improving that offensive line. And also the quarterback, Blaine Gabbert.
We are seeing a trade. The Raiders have traded back and traded the pick at number 3 to the Miami Dolphins, who, you know,
they're going to take a tackle. Yeah, it's going to be tackle in this draft, because the expectation is that the kid from Oklahoma,
Lane Johnson,
who is a one-year starter at left tackle for Oklahoma, they need to replace Jake Long. And certainly they needed to replace Jake Long because they haven't been able to work out the trade for Brandon Albert. Now, they said, the Miami Dolphins said, they've tabled those talks until after tonight.
Well,
maybe the Miami Dolphins said, hey, look, we're not going to wait around and hope it happens. We're going to go ahead and get our guy.
So Kansas City might be stuck not having got that done, and I'm sure that they consider the possibility. Miami's pick is in, and we will wait to find out exactly where they have gone. And still waiting to hear from the head coach, the general manager, and eventually the selection, Luke Jokel, as the Jaguars begin this rebuild. That's really what it is.
Well, and I think John Osher said it best a little while ago when he was talking about what he would think that the view of this building project would be with David Caldwell, and that, hey, look, this is a clean slate. And you almost look at it as if there's nothing really here. As a clean slate, and it looks as if that's the option that we were looking at.
All right, so Luke Jokel in the books, now a Jacksonville Jaguar, and David Caldwell steps into the room, and we're going to talk to the Jaguars general manager. First of all, congratulations on the pick. He's a guy clearly you guys love.
Yeah, we love everything about him, from not only just being a football player, but his mentality. He is extremely wired the right way that we like our football players. He's tough, he's competitive, he's been reliable in his whole career. And he's still young. He's 21 years old, and he's coming out as a true junior. And, he's just going to get better, too, on top of all that. So 110 days ago when Chad Khan interviewed me, he asked me who the best player in this year's draft was, and I told him Luke Jokel.
Way back then.
Way back when. And here we are today, selecting him.
How much indication did you have that he might be available to you? Were you pretty clued in to the fact that Kansas City was going to take Fisher, or did you just hear
else? We weren't 100% clued in. We had a pretty good idea last night. That's the direction they're going to go in. And to be honest with you, Eric's going to be a great player too. And both those guys are very evenly matched. But we feel great about Luke and the fact that this is an SEC football player that's played at a very high level of competition. He played against some of the best pass rushers in the country the last couple of years. Blocked Von Miller as a freshman in practice every day.
Yeah.
So from that aspect, we felt great about that. And to be able to bring a cornerstone, a pillar of our franchise, a pillar of our team, into Jacksonville, we felt really good about.
From watching the little bit of film that I was able to watch on that was available, you had mentioned the term technician. To watch his sets and his angles that he takes against defenders, I think he plays above a lot of players at the college game because he seems to anticipate alignments and where he needs to be.
Yes, very understands alignments, uses his hands very well, very good footwork, and understands angles. And that's the biggest thing about offensive alignment is I think a lot of mistakes are made amongst offensive linemen because people are like, oh, he's big, he's athletic, he's fast, but does he understand the game? It very seldom you say, hey, he's a really good football player as an offensive lineman. You say he's big, he's fast, he's powerful, but Luke is a very good football player. He has those other intangibles, but the fact that he is a good football player and understands the game is what made him so attractive.
And when he was in high school, one of the most highly coveted recruits in the nation, he goes to Texas A&M, starts from day one, 39 starts, as you had mentioned. He's been a left tackle his whole career. Where do you see him playing for the Jaguars?
Sure. We see him going in at right tackle right now. And, back when you guys had Tony Baselli in the left tackle, Leon Searcy in the right tackle, we felt like that we could duplicate that with Eugene Monroe and Luke, in this future here. And I think those guys played together for a good you know, 4 or 5 years. So we look forward to having two cornerstones and bookends out there at offensive tackle. And, you know, Eugene's a top 10 offensive tackle in this league, and we feel that Luke can end up being probably maybe one of the best right tackles in the league.
You know, we were talking about the competitor in him, and you talked about that top competitor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a great way for Eugene and for Luke to go into camp.
Correct.
Even though they're going to play other sides of the line,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure there'll be points in time where Luke will take reps at the left, just in case, you know, if something unfortunate happened to Eugene, you know, during the season, we're going to have somebody over there. But the way the NFL is now, you know, Indianapolis in our division, Robert Mathis lines up on the left side. So he's one of the top pass rushers in the league. So we need somebody on that right side to shut down guys like that. And the way the NFL is, pressure from the left, pressure from the right, it's equal in terms of what's coming.
And you talk about the way the game is. You mentioned Robert Mathis as a pass rusher from the defensive left side or offensive right side. The way the game has changed and it's become such a passing league, is right tackle also becoming more of a premium position than maybe it's been in years past?
Absolutely. And the way the new CBA is too, you're allowed to take an offensive tackle higher and put him on the right side, just because there's not as much of a financial investment as there has been in years past, where you're paying, you know, $35 million guaranteed. Now,
yeah,
you know, that these guys can come in as a rookie, be a right tackle, and still have really good value. And you look at what the San Francisco 49ers have done, and, you know, Anthony Davis, they just paid a lot of money to be their right tackle. They got Joe Staley on the left side. So that's, you know, something that's really interesting. And we want to pass the ball. We want to be an aggressive offense, but, you know, we want to run it too. But we need to pass protect. And we gave up the third most sacks last year as an offense.
How much better does Luke Jokel make Cecil Shorts, Justin Blackmon, Maurice Jones-Drew, and Blaine Gabbert?
He makes them a lot better. And, you know, and it's going to be having him on the right side, having Eugene on the left, Brad Meester coming back, our two guards in Uchi and possibly Rackley if he comes back healthy. That's a good strength of our team now, and under Coach Fish's guidance and our offense, it's going to give us a good chance to have a viable offense this year.
So you've got your guy. Now, what does the war room look like with your team the rest of the night in there?
You know, we're just going to track it and see if there's any other opportunities. You know, most of the night we'll be pretty much just watching and seeing and seeing what falls to us and see how the rest of the draft unfolds.
And then a busy day tomorrow sitting with the first pick in the second round.
Really busy first pick in the second round and the second pick in the third round.
Popular guy.
How long will it take the phones to ring after the draft concludes tonight with you guys having the first selection tomorrow night?
Well, I don't know that, to be honest with you, but we'll see. I think it depends on who comes off at 32 and who's left. I think everybody's going to sit back and say, hey, you know what? You know, we didn't expect that guy to come through the first round. Let's maybe see if we can go get him.
Could you envision a better scenario? I mean, you got your guy.
Right.
And then now, because of the tiebreakers with Kansas City, you have the first pick on day two and the first pick on day three.
That's great, yeah. We're almost better off, to be honest.
Yeah.
Sometimes things just work out.
Yeah. Thank you, Kansas City, right?
Well, you know, it's about time that, you know, this is just the beginning for us. And with Coach Bradley and his coaching staff and, you know, good things to come. And, you know, it's gonna be good. And this is just the first piece of the kind of the building block, the foundation that we like to call. And on top of some of the good players that we have here currently. So we look forward to it.
Before we let you go, what was it like for you personally making your first draft selection in your life? Your selection.
Yeah, you know what? Today was really the first. I was out, you know, jogging along the river in Jacksonville and doing a little walk, and I did reflect a little bit. And today was really the first time that it kind of really hit me. And a really good feeling. And the best part about it is it's in Jacksonville. And this city and this town has been great. These fans out there in the field where we just got back, they are incredible. And we're excited to be part of this community. And it's really good. And this, you know, Shad Khan being our owner and what he's willing to do for this community and this for this team, it is a great situation.
It's been a very exciting week. And now, obviously, to have this football player and everything left the rest of the weekend, best of luck.
Great.
David, thanks so much,
Brian,
for your time.
Congratulations.
Thanks. That's Jaguars General Manager David Caldwell. And we'll take a break and come back with more of our live coverage of the Jaguars NFL Draft presented by PwC on Jaguars Radio.
Watch. They see it as...
All right, we want to thank Turner Construction for being the presenting sponsor of the annual Jaguars Partner Golf Tournament next month at TPC. Welcome back. Our coverage of the Jaguars 2013 NFL Draft presented by PwC rolls along. We just talked to David Caldwell.
Boy, was he pumped up. And could you sense the adrenaline?
Yeah.
I mean, he just came from to us from the crowd outside. And obviously, his first draft pick in his young career at 39 years old. He gets pumped up by the crowd, and he comes in here, and he literally was almost shaking with excitement and adrenaline, you could tell.
I like the fact that he said 110 days ago when he interviewed with Shad, and Shad asked, who's the best player in this draft? He said Luke Jokel. Mm-hmm. And then you just tied it all together at the end of that by saying they got the guy they wanted who's the best player in the draft at number two, plus the first pick on day two and on day three, which gives them all those hours to negotiate.
Absolutely.
For people. They really, boy, you just get the sense, yeah, it's small. But maybe the tide is turning around here. Things are going to go this franchise's way.
Yeah, and you hope so. But, I mean, he was very excited to be able to get Luke Jokel. You know, sometimes, you know, when you talk after a pick and you talk to coaches or general manager, you see their interviews, you kind of see their excitement, and it's mainly because that's their guy, and they've got to say that that's the guy we always wanted him. We were hoping he was there. He was the guy we targeted all along. And that little tidbit, like you said, of him telling Shad Khan that Luke Jokel 109 days ago was the best player in the draft, I mean, that's spot on.
You know, we've seen three offensive tackles in the first four picks now that Lane Johnson is a Philadelphia Eagle. And Tony Khan just tweeted, and we all know that Tony with the Sabermetrics is into the numbers, and he's got great stuff. So if you're on Twitter, you should follow him. But he says, the first-round tackles chosen outside the top 10 from 90 to 2008 only started an average of 58.5 games over their first five seasons. And what he means is, if you want a big tackle, you got to go get him, and that's what the Eagles did. It's what the Jaguars did with Luke Jokel, who will be here for the rookie minicamp next weekend. And I know, Coach Bradley, how are you? Congratulations.
Great.
I know you're excited about getting a guy like this.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we really are. I mean, this has been a process. We know it's not how you start, just like in a game. It's how you finish. And we really like the pick, and we like, you know, who was there for us. Luke was a guy that we were really excited about. We weren't sure if he would be there. You know, all the talk was about him being the first pick, and we were prepared if he wasn't, but for him to fall to us was great.
David had shared a story with us that he said 109 days ago he was asked by Jaguars owner Shad Khan who the best player in the draft coming up was, and he had said Luke Jokel.
He did. He's had strong conviction over Luke, and I mean, that's not a hard argument when you watch him on tape. He's a really good player, really good player. And I know we were talking about the whole process because we thought there's a chance that Kansas City could take him. And Fisher's a good player, too. Obviously, a lot of people have talked about those two being the top two guys in the draft. So we were prepared either way. But when we heard the pick and we knew Luke fell to us, it was great.
You know, something that you said earlier today at the sponsor luncheon, and I've heard you say several times, is get better. That's your sole focus. No distractions. Get better.
Right.
How much better did you get today by adding Luke Jokel to your offensive line?
Well, you know, there's going to be – we feel strongly about him as a player. He's still got to come in and perform, and he's got to have that mindset that we talk about. But just visiting with him for 45 minutes one-on-one in my office, you know, I felt very strongly that, you know, he really fits the bill. We talked about getting tough, reliable, smart, competitive guys within our organization, and you know, he fits that bill. I know that you know, we talk about that with all of our players. I know there's going to be talk about with Eugene, you know, saying, now what, Gus? Well, now what? Let's go. You know, we'll take Eugene's a very good player. We feel very strongly about him. He had a really good 3-day mini camp. His attitude and his work ethic has been outstanding. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
And David, we had asked David, you know, where does Luke fit? And his response was right tackle. We feel that he can be a right tackle. Is that where you're thinking as
well?
I mean, I would imagine this conversation already happened
right
between you and David.
Well, you know, there's open competition. But, you know, when you take a guy in the second pick overall in the draft, he's got a great opportunity there. And to keep Eugene in his comfort level and to have him be our right tackle, I mean, it couldn't be work out any better.
So let's go ahead.
Let me ask you, I just asked this question of David. How much better does having, you know, a top pick offensive lineman make your skill positions that you have right now, quarterback, wide receiver, running back? How much better does he help make those guys better?
We hope that it really shows up. I know we've done multiple studies. Tony Khan and his group have done all sorts of stats and analogies for us as far as pressures per game and quarterback rating. And, I mean, it's not a hard stat to figure out that the more pressure a quarterback gets, the lower his quarterback rating is. So we felt like, you know, with this opportunity to get Luke, you know, maybe we can help a couple positions out. and you know, could help our quarterback out, could help the receivers. They get more time to run their routes, so it really could help our whole team, and that's what you hope when you pick a guy like Luke.
You know you're going to be asked the Eugene Monroe question over and over, and you did answer it, but just to redirect it a little bit. So you go into the season with the idea that Eugene Monroe can earn a new contract here. This is not a one-and-done for Eugene by any stretch of
no,
the imagination.
No, not in my mindset.
Just want to clarify.
Yeah,
that.
No, I mean, Eugene's competing, and he's out in the field, and, you know, like I've said, I've had many conversations with Eugene, and he's been outstanding. So we look for him just to continue to get better, and that's his focus, and he's staying strict to it.
Has right tackle become as important a position in some respects as left tackle?
You're seeing it more and more. I mean, some of the stats that we found, you know, a lot of the pressures come from the right side. And so I think that right tackle spot has become more and more important for teams.
I know that when I was an ambidextrous defensive end,
yeah.
I used to always want to go to the left side, knowing that, you know, in the days of old, the lesser athlete always played right tackle.
Right.
You know, well, that's got to change the way the game is today.
Yeah, and so many times, you know, most offenses put the tight end to the defense's left. You know, our offensive right, they do that because that's the more, you know, the stout tackle, you know, the more run-blocking tackle, where the other one's the more athletic. So, but you're right. I mean, I know in Seattle we try to do that. We try to match up, you know, Bruce Irvin on the right tackle. So, and I think that's where the stats show that some of the pressures are coming from that side. So it's good to have two good tackles.
Because it gives you flexibility.
It does. It does.
All right, I know you're a defensive guy.
Yeah.
You got an offensive
I know. How about that, huh? I told you I'm not just defense.
Exactly. So you're staying true to form.
No.
All right, well, you know, tomorrow you've got the first pick.
Yeah,
on day two, and you've got some things you want to address, obviously on the defensive side of the ball. But do you just say, "Hey, look, we're going to take the best available player if he's offensive guy," or do we say, "Hey, look, we really got to look at the defensive side of the ball"?
Right. I think we understand where we're at and some of our needs, but we're still going to try to stay true to picking the best player. Hopefully, in the second round, we can pick a player that's going to be here for the next 8, 9 years or 10 years. And to do that, you got to really take the best available. So, you know, obviously we have some needs, like I stated before, and if we can fulfill that need with a good player that's there, that's great. And that would be ideal.
We saw on the War Room, Cam, that you're in the War Room. How involved is your coaching staff over the next couple of days from this process? Or have they done their part already and now you've already got
no,
their grades?
No, you know what? Our whole mindset is the evaluation process is never over. So I had Tony Khan just put together some tapes for our coaches to watch. And they've been heavily involved with the draft process. Our scouts have done a great job. And I think it's really worked well together, so the scouts have a feeling what we're looking for as an offense and defensive staff and special teams as well. So, yeah, the evaluation process is never over. And I know tonight is what's really going to be interesting to me. I know everybody's pumped up about, you know, 1 through 15, but from 20, you know, to our pick, I mean, that's going to be really interesting to take a look at what takes place there. You know, there may be some calls, you know, for trades or, you know, if there's somebody that we really covet at that pick, you know, we've got some decisions to make.
And everybody's talking, at least the experts, the analysts, are talking about this draft being 40, 50 deep with quality football players, and you guys are going to be picking 33, so you're right in there where those quality players are still at.
Yeah, that's right. We hope to get another really good quality player at that pick.
All right. Well, we can see the smile on your face. Yeah.
Congratulations.
It's so evident.
Yeah. That's not hard, huh,
no.
When the first pick falls
no.
to you like
Absolutely.
That, or second pick falls to you like that.
You can't quite tell us that you've got 33 down to two guys.
Yeah.
It's not the same game anymore.
Right, that's right.
Best of luck. Get the guys you want the rest of the way.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
That's head coach Gus Bradley, and we will take a break and return with more coverage of the 2013 Jaguars NFL Draft presented by PwC here on Jaguars Radio.
It's most accurate.
Well, the 2013 NFL Draft is brought to you by Bud Light, the sure sign of a good time. Here we go. We are endeavoring to find Tony Boselli across the pond in London, and we think we will have him on to get his perspective on the Jaguars' first pick, Luke Jokel, an offensive tackle. We'll leave it at that. Left tackle, right tackle, interchangeable.
Well,
in this situation.
I like what Gus Bradley said, and that, you know, because his whole thing, as I said before, he's always talked about, you know, I want things uncomfortable. And he didn't come out and flat out say that, hey, Eugene is left and Luke Jokel is going to be right. He said these guys are going to compete. Hey.
Now, Caldwell did say, though, that he expected
it. Yeah, he kind of expects it, but, you know, he's the general manager.
Sure.
and then he's the coach. You know, coach does what he wants with the players, I would assume. But I'm sure they've had that conversation before. But, you know, Gus Bradley wants to make sure that he's getting the competitive spirit flowing with both of those guys, and I think that's great.
You know, if Eugene comes in and the competition motivates him and he earns that big contract, the Jaguars could be in a great position on the offensive line for years to come.
I think you know, in my conversation that I had with Gus Bradley earlier today, I had talked about the lesser financial risk of a top pick compared to a few years ago and how that kind of changes the mindset. Now, I wasn't talking about maybe having, you know, a top pick tackle along with a Eugene Monroe. That wasn't the reason for asking that. It was more in the lines of, boy, you probably don't feel like you have to have a certain level of production with a guy that's probably going to end up with $40 million guaranteed, because that's what it would have been if it was like a few years ago.
Yeah, completely different deal.
So financially, I think David Caldwell was right on the money in that because of the controls on rookie salaries, you know, it could work in the future with a Eugene Monroe at left tackle and a Luke Jokel at right tackle. But the question that I have is that he hasn't played right tackle in I don't know how long or if ever. So there is going to be an adjustment period.
All right. So we're looking now down the line to 33, and so much can happen that trying to project it. But if you're sitting there at 33, I'm told that quarterbacks in this draft are not worth that spot, that none of the guys fit at the top of the second round. You know, maybe Geno Smith, maybe, but that these guys belong a little bit further down the board. Would you, how much do you want to trade back? Or do you want to, if there's a pass rusher sitting there, would you stay there?
Well, I think that if you're David Caldwell and you just drafted a left tackle, then I think that you're looking at it as a completely clean slate. So that tells me that if they don't have strong feelings about one of these quarterbacks, they're not going to force it, that they will have patience to maybe wait until next year. Because you know what? After the minicamp, I thought Blaine Gabbert had a very strong third day in the minicamp. I thought his first 2 days were kind of okay, and I thought the third day was you really kind of saw it starting to click a little bit for him. You know, we don't really know what their opinion is on Blaine Gabbert after that minicamp. You know, so maybe they say, hey, look, and here's the question, though. If you draft a guy, a quarterback, in the second round, okay, and all these guys have second-round grades or lower, right, on their ratings.
Yes.
Do you expect that guy to be able to beat out a Blaine Gabbert who's going into his third year?
No.
No, I don't think it's possible either. So do you look at this and say, hey, look, let's see how we can end up doing in the development with Blaine Gabbert and maybe wait until we feel strongly about a guy in a future year and then build this football team and utilize that second pick towards another position that we sorely need? Because, hey, let's face it, this football team has a lot of holes to be able to fill, you know, to make this roster competitive. Cornerback. Oh, holy cow, cornerback. I mean, both guys from last year are gone. Linebacker, Darryl Smith is gone. You know, you need to have another linebacker, a defensive end. You've got Jeremy Mincy, who got a pretty good contract last year, and you've got an aging Jason Babin. You know, can Jason Babin play the Leo? Certainly not for the long term. So, I mean, there's a lot of holes to be able to look at to fill for this team.
You're listening to coverage of the Jaguars NFL Draft in 2013, brought to you by PwC on WOKV AM Jacksonville and WOKV FM Ponte Vedra Beach. Brian Sexton along with Jeff Loggeman. We're waiting for Tony Boselli, and then we'll wrap up our coverage here. We really appreciate the contributions that a lot of folks have made. Gus Bradley, Dave Caldwell, both stopping in here to talk about Luke Jokel. You know, the safety position is one, obviously, that's going to have to be addressed also. And Gus made the point on Monday at his news conference that he thought that they didn't necessarily have that prototypical safety.
No, but you know what? To me, that's a non-premium position. You'd like to be able to find a guy, but you're not going to force it.
Here's Tony Boselli, who stepped off of Sky Sports in London to share some thoughts. Luke Jokel, what do you think?
I love the pick. I don't think you could have gone wrong with either Eric Fisher or Luke Jokel. They were the two best players in this draft. We talked about maybe Ziggy Ansah as an impact, but that would have been a bigger risk. But the Luke Jokel, he's a guy who can play right or left tackle. We talked about it a couple weeks ago, Jeff, about the competition that creates the left tackle. And worst case scenario, you have two great bookends that make you pretty dang competitive right away.
Tony, you know, playing left defensive end and then moving to right or vice versa required a little bit of an adjustment period, but playing defensive end, it's a little bit more of being athletic as opposed to technical. How difficult would it have been for you to go from a left tackle in college to playing right tackle in the pros?
I think I could have handled it in one mini camp. I mean, heck, in the Pro Bowl back when they actually did play, I had to play right tackle against some of the best players, and by the end of the game, I felt fairly comfortable. I think if you're an athletic guy, you can get away with it. I think if you can play left, you should be able to play right. It might take a few practices, you know, be a little rusty in your footwork, a little backwards for a little bit, but if you're an athlete, which Luke Jokel is, you'll figure it out and you'll be fine. And if Eugene Moreau has to make that move, he'll be fine too because he's a great athlete as well.
Have you seen the pictures of Luke Jokel?
I did, and I've seen the tweets and the comments.
I said at the beginning of the show, I said, have you guys seen a picture of Luke Jokel? And Brian pulled it up on his computer and he said, oh my gosh.
Yeah, he looks, I have to say, he looks a little bit like me back in 1995,
yeah.
A little bit of a round, pudgy face and young looking. And listen, I wish him the best. I mean, he's not going to have a bigger fan than me and someone who's going to be rooting real hard for him to play really well and help this franchise get better.
You know, we had mentioned earlier about all the change that's happened with his organization that I made the comment that this really truly feels like a new era in Jaguars football with the uniform change and the ownership change, the new general manager and the new head coach, and eerily similar to the beginning era of this franchise, and that the second overall pick is a left tackle.
That looks like you.
It's just, hey, listen, I hope they turn it around as fast as we did, Jeff, and I hope they're fighting for the playoffs and end up fighting, trying to get to the Super Bowl in year two, 1 year from now. So I think it's a good move. I think I like the fact that he was the best player on the board for Dave Caldwell, and I think it's a great start to his era as a general manager.
Tony, I know you're in London and you didn't have a chance to hear this, but we had General Manager David Caldwell in here just a little bit ago, and he had shared with us that 109 days ago in his interview process with Jaguars owner Shad Khan had asked him who's the best player in the draft, and he had said at that point, Luke Jokel. How about that?
That makes it pretty easy when he's on the board, doesn't it? So that's exciting. Hey, guys, I got to jump. I got to get back on the air here in London at Sky Sports.
You got it.
But it's exciting. What a great start to the year with the draft getting Luke Jokel at number two.
All right, Tony, travel home safely. That is Tony Buscelli from London, and that pretty much sews up our draft coverage.
The Union Jacks, Tony Buscelli over there with the Jaguars fan club over there in London.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and, you know, we'll put the bow on this one. Jaguars 2013 NFL Draft presented by PwC, and we wrap it up after this on Jaguars Radio. PwC's Earn Your Future initiative is empowering students and future leaders through financial responsibility. PwC, proud to sponsor the 2013 Jacksonville Jaguars NFL Draft. And we certainly enjoyed having Rick Moyer and his team from PricewaterhouseCoopers with us for most of the day. All right, let's go into recap where we're at right now. The Chiefs obviously took Eric Fisher. We've been talking about the Jaguars selection of offensive tackle Luke Jokel from Texas A&M. The Dolphins jumped up, giving up a second-round pick to go from number 12 to number 3 with the Raiders. They took Deion Jordan, the pass rusher, the linebacker, from the Oregon Ducks. Then the Eagles stepped in, took Lane Johnson, the offensive tackle, one-year starter at Oklahoma. At number 5, Ziggy Ansah, the pass rusher for the Lions. Then the Browns take Barkevius Mingo. The Cardinals grab John Cooper, the offensive guard from North Carolina, not Chance Warmack. And the Rams gave up a boatload of picks to go up to 8 with Buffalo and get in front of the Jets to draft Tavon Austin, the wide receiver from West Virginia.
Kind of surprising there. You know, the Rams ended up acquiring a bunch of picks from the Washington Redskins trade last year of RG3. And I think that they made a mistake because they treated all them picks as a luxury instead of coveting them the way they moved up and gave up the picks to the Bills. Kudos to the Buffalo Bills, though.
Yeah. Well, they wanted to back up and get a quarterback.
I mean, you're
fit at 8.
And you're talking a football team that is in much need of as many picks as they can so that they can build that roster with a new head coach in Marone. So that may have been right what the doctor ordered for them.
All right, so that's where we're at right now. And the New York Jets are on the clock with the first of their two first-round picks, followed by the Tennessee Titans. Jaguars get their guy. Good start, Logs.
Yeah, I like it. I do. I think it makes it. It's the best pick that you could have had to make your team better, because he's going to improve, first of all, the quarterback play, because it's going to allow Blaine Gabbert to have more time in the pockets, which I thought last year, I mean, he was running for his life, as well as Chad Henne. And it's going to allow him to get the ball to the skill position players better. And the real strength of this football team, providing Maurice comes back healthy, is Maurice running the football.
Rams think maybe they've got Azakeem. They're showing this video all over the place of Tavon Austin. So we'll see if the value is
small
there.
Guy, you know, a 5'8 guy, kind of a 170-pounder. The Rams are doing kind of reacting as if they have a franchise quarterback and that he needs weapons around him. But I think that the book is still out on whether Sam Bradford is a franchise quarterback.
And we obviously have been talking about Blaine Gabbert. So that'll do it for our draft coverage. Loggy, thanks so much. Appreciate
Enjoyed
the contributions
it.
Of Joe Fortunato, John Dineen, and thank David Caldwell, John Osher, and Gus Bradley for joining us.
Well,
this
we
evening.
Can't forget the my favorite, J.P. Chadwick.
Oh, and Tony Boselli in London also. Have a great night, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us on Jaguars Radio.